From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Tonight we deal with various aspects of consciousness with two special guests. But here's what's happening right now. An armed Iraq war veteran suspected of killing a Mount Rainier National Park ranger managed to evade snowshoe-wearing SWAT teams and dogs on his trail for nearly a day. He couldn't, however, escape the cold. A plane searching the remote wilderness for Benjamin Colton Barnes, a 24-year-old, discovered his body lying partially submerged in an icy, snowy mountain creek with snowbanks standing several feet high on either side. Barnes did not have any external wounds and appears to have died from the elements. A medical examiner was at the scene to determine the exact cause of death. He said two weapons were recovered, but declined to say where they were located. According to police and court documents, Barnes had a troubled transition to civilian life, with accusations and a child custody dispute that he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder following his Iraq deployments and was suicidal. And that's a big problem because thousands and thousands of soldiers are coming home. Joyce Riley, registered nurse and also heads up the Gulf War Vets Association. Joyce, this is a serious problem, but how many vets might have this syndrome?
George, it's hard to tell because we're not getting an accurate report from the Department of Defense. They are not helping us at all in determining how severe these returning vets' conditions are. Part of the problem is that they don't want us to know about it. They don't want the people to know how seriously ill these troops are. They don't want us to know the number of murders that are taking place as a result of these veterans. For instance, if we were to talk in terms, and I would have to say that anyone is a potential problem person returning to this country, if they regret what they did, if they didn't want to be involved in the war after they got there, all those kinds of mental issues.
Oh, yeah.
But then you've got the depleted uranium that's messing with their brain, that's destroying the blood flow to the brain. That's the issue that I'm concerned about here, because if we want to talk about the veterans, we could talk about not only Benjamin Colton Barnes, but we could talk about Timothy McVeigh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now think about the amazing amount of damage that he did and the issue still not being addressed. You've got Terry Nichols, who was in the military, a gentleman named Daryl Holton. He killed his four children. I was contacted about this case after he did it because no one could understand why this man told his children they were going to go have a Christmas surprise, and he machine gunned them down. Then you have David Bradley. He was in the UK, Royal Artillery. He killed four people.
Jeez.
His service time, first Gulf War arena. Davin Lindell Thomas killed his girlfriend. Robert Flores, you may remember him in 2002, University of Arizona, went in and killed three professors of nursing and then shot himself.
And what happens, Joyce, as they come back, as some of them get out of the military, not all of them are out immediately when they come back, but when they come back and they get out, the economy's tough. There might not be any jobs for them. Doesn't that add to the problem?
Well, certainly it's going to add to anybody's list of problems. I mean, you've got a laundry list of things that are upsetting you or concerning you, and that's one of them. But then you've got people like Tony DeZant in Florida, who had been out of the military for about 13 years, and he wasn't having any of those problems. And all of a sudden, he dismembered his wife and his son. I mean, so you're having these situations that are so bizarre that we have to look at the who, what, where, when, and why. Who's it happening to? Gulf War I, Gulf War II, Bosnian troops, all the way back to 1989, wherever they served. Then you've got, where were they? Bosnia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. And when? 89 to the present. And why? Because war is for killing people and breaking things. And because they're using depleted uranium, chemicals, biologicals, they're dumping things in these incredible big holes over there, toxic dumps that we talked about the last time I was on.
Right.
They're coming back with a myriad of problems, and many of them are not their fault.
All right, Joyce, let's not let this problem go away and let us investigate it. I'd like you to put together a group of doctors and people like that and maybe some vets who have come back from Iraq or Afghanistan, and let's do a full-blown show on this because it's a serious subject. Joyce Riley, Her websites, of course, you'll find on her Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. As we reported yesterday, blackbirds raining from the sky for the second new year running over the town of Beebe, Arkansas. Now they say more likely a criminal rather than supernatural phenomenon. The authorities in the small U.S. town said that the dead birds littering the streets exactly a year after 4,000 plummeted to the ground, sparking a media frenzy and apocalyptic prophecies, were targeted. However, Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter, tells me in an email tonight that there were severe weather anomalies over the area, so who knows? Three men arrested and a fourth being sought by the FBI in connection with what investigators say was a scheme to market stem cells as miracle cures to desperate people suffering from terminal diseases. The arrest began in the last 10 days after two indictments were issued in November, charging the four with 39 counts of mail fraud and unlawfully manufacturing, distributing, and selling stem cells and stem cell procedures not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. They say now a diet rich in vitamins and fish may protect the brain from aging, while junk food has the opposite effect, according to research. Elderly people with high blood levels of vitamins and omega-3 fatty acids had less brain shrinkage and better mental performance, according to a new study. Bank America tightening up with small businesses, not good. Under pressure to raise capital and cut risks, it's severing lines of credit to some small business owners who have used that money to stay afloat. The Charlotte, North Carolina bank is demanding that these customers pay off their credit line balances all at once instead of making monthly payments. Most of these small businesses can't do that, so the bank gives them a second option. If they can't pay in full, they are being offered new repayment plans for as long as 5 years, but with tremendously high interest rates than their original credit lines had been. NASA has succeeded in placing two new satellites in orbit around the moon. Both spacecraft were put in paths around the body over the weekend after performing braking maneuvers following their more than 100-day journey from Earth. It only takes 3 days to physically get to the moon, but they had the satellites circling our planet before they went to the moon, and then off to the moon they went. The identical Grail twins are to map gravity variations across the lunar body in an unprecedented detail. This will help scientists refine our theories for how the moon was formed. And if you snooze, you lose on Wednesday morning when a little-known but active meteor shower will start 2012 for people brave enough to fight the chilly hours before dawn. Who will be up watching the skies? None other than Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. Hey, this is a little one. How do you even pronounce the name of this shower?
Well, George, good morning and happy new year to the Coast family for 2012. But the correct pronunciation of this meteor shower is called the Quadrantids. And many people may be saying, what? Most meteor showers named after constellations like Gemini for, you know, Geminids for Gemini, Leo, Leonids.
I wanted you on tonight, Steve, because I didn't want to have to try to pronounce the name of this thing.
Well, this is a funny one, George. Actually, the derivation of Quadrantids comes back from an old constellation that we got rid of during the early part of the last century, the International Astronomical Union. They got rid of a constellation called Quadrans Muralis. What the heck was that? It was some kind of a measuring device that ships would use at sea. But since we're all in the modern world today, in the digital world, we'll just say this way. We call it the Quadrantids. And here's what's great that you just mentioned. The shower kicks off 2012 so well, it's actually one of the best meteor showers for what we call ZHR, zenith hourly rates. That means the most meteors that you can see within an hour. So here's how to see it. If you're up and want to brave the cold, and I'll sure try that myself, 2:20 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, January 4th, is actually the peak. In simpler terms, look to the northeast, to the tail star of the Big Dipper. That's the region, George, that these meteors should be coming from.
Good. That's a good tip. Because a lot of times, Stephen, until I talk to you, I go out to try to look for meteor showers, and I'm looking all over the place.
There you go.
It's nice to be able to pinpoint it.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. You have to get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at the highlight reel. We've got a little video there that I've got to tell you. Maybe one of the funniest I've ever seen. A frustrated frog trying to catch digital insects on a smartphone has notched up more than 2.5 million hits on YouTube. It's going to go even higher now that we've got it linked. The African bullfrog is the second member of the animal kingdom after a bearded dragon was virally linked playing the Ant Smasher game. Now, this frog's aim is well on target, and on numerous occasions, as you see, he actually manages to crush the virtual insects, and he does a great job doing that. But he becomes increasingly frustrated as the frog realizes that the ants it has caught are still on the screen and not in his belly. And as the game winds down, the man goes to touch the screen, but in a surprise twist, well, you'll have to look at the video so you'll see what the frog did. It's great. Up next, Dr. Lori Levin joins us. We're going to be talking about consciousness and opening up your spirituality. She's on for 2 hours, special guest, two-part show tonight. Dr. Levin is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. She's the author of God, the Universe, Where I Fit In. She's been on the program before, Dr. Lori Levin, a clinical psychologist, founder and CEO of Moonview Sanctuary. Lori offers all kinds of tools and others that you can use to enable yourself to tap into resources of intuition and guidance, offering insight into the mental process and behavior. And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to take a look at various aspects of 2012 and where we're headed. But let me welcome Lori back to the program. Hi, Lori. How are you?
George, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, everybody. And I am so thrilled for you with your new book, Talking to the Dead. Wow.
Well, thank you. By the way, our mutual friend Michael Rosenfeld says hello.
Hi, Michael.
He's out there.
Wow, welcome. It's 2012. It's a big change year for everybody.
It sure is. And I hope it's better than 2011 for many people.
If you don't resist the change.
That's a good point. What do you mean by that?
Well, when we go up against our patterns, if we get stuck, if we feel it's the end of a road of some sort, even if we get so bleak that we want to die, that kind of exhaustion on a pattern or your expression is the deconstruct before the dawn, which is the new burgeoning shift. And that, I maintain, is quite exciting.
Are we being tested, Lori? I mean, we're being hit with all kinds of things.
Globally, we're being hit, and individually, we're being hit. So if you have a spiritual view, yes, I think we're all being tested together, and it's the collective that will grow together, even though each individual part may be uniquely shifting in their own way. If you're an atheist, then you have to construct for yourself what you're up against. But I do believe we are being tested. And I think it's an exciting time, though.
With this test, I mean, some people may fail, right?
Yeah.
What happens to them?
Well, let me back up. The prediction of the end of time, 12/21/2012. What I think is that it's the end of the collusion of humanity, to think of time as linear. Our next year is an exciting year to embrace our vastness, that we are much more than just our corporeal body, that time is not linear. So the death might be those who lose, might get caught in the cold constructs of all you see is what you get, rather than embracing the incredible vastness of themselves.
Well, now, can people do this alone, or do they have to do it collectively?
That's the test. My postulate is the reason that we're all up against it, some of us financially, some of us through our families, some of us through our work situations, the global crash of all economies, the unprecedented weather conditions, the poverty, all of this together, we must join together and collectively problem solve, which is going to bring us into the positive system. We're leaving the dark, which is all of the fears, the chaos, the confusion, the deficit. It's our loops of thinking, our difficult internal states that have been wired together with dark constructs of problem solving to jump forward into the new constructs, which is improvisation, collective collaboration, co-creation. We don't have to grow anymore from the dark if you begin to embrace your vastness. You want me to further explain?
Please.
All right. This requires an act of going into a meditative state before we jump out of bed, before we go and grab our handheld or our iPad or get in front of the computer if you're that privileged. And if you're not that privileged and you just jump into doing to make the day work for you, take a beat. And if you're spiritual, go to your highest self, your angelic realms, your ancestors, God as you know it, and take a beat and say, what might I need to know that I wouldn't even know to ask? That moment of going beyond your pattern and inviting in that love and light, which is of your highest good, and staying still is that moment that you commune with that which is bigger than self, to understand in a linear way. That's you entering into that multidimensional world. You know, we've had the industrial age, we have the mechanical age. We are now entering in 2012 the multidimensional age.
You know, every new year, people are excited. You know, they anticipate a better year than the previous one. But this one's different. I'm picking up already, a day into it, where people really are expecting a better new year. Are you feeling that too, Lori? Yes. I mean, you're pretty intuitive.
I believe that we are in the burgeoning of probably the greatest year of transformation that we will collectively together embark on, that we will go and surpass all of the patterns and constructs that we were wired with from early childhood, go beyond our ancestral DNA, go beyond our ancestral problems as a soul group, go beyond our humanity that we've conspired to collude to understand, and blow open a new reality of our vastness. We will start to explore the dream plane and how we work on the dream plane. We'll start to explore our connectedness to people that we have never met, yet we work with, even though we may have never met them or talked to them. We're going to start to explore ourselves in our own receiving of intuitive information. We'll take a beat when we get the chills or we get an eye twitch or a pang. We'll take a beat when we start to get a dream that doesn't get somewhat interpreted in a Freudian or Jungian way. We'll start to look at ourselves as an exquisite beacon of sending and receiving and start to pay attention to that web of love that really exists.
What do we do, Lori, to keep the momentum going? Because you have to. You mean, there's going to be times where something's going to happen. There's going to be a catastrophe, a tragedy, and people are going to let their guard down. They're going to get down. They're going to get depressed. What do they have to do to keep moving forward?
Pain is part of growth. It's like telling an 11-year-old who's going through their growth spurt that your femur bone is not supposed to hurt. Pain is a quotient of growth. But we don't have to sit in the same loop that we use to problem solve. So when you see yourself in that mental looping, you know, or that difficult internal state of anxiety, you take a beat and you say, how can I get to this in a new way? Going into nature will help. Going into the animal kingdom, you know, using a dog, a pet, a bird, going by the ocean, sitting in a bath, walking by a river, working up early in the morning, doing journaling, automatic writing, talking to people, affiliation, humor. Humor is a great source of enlightenment. So, you know, it gets really dark right now, and it's really fine. And that's why I say we're being tested. But if we can take a beat and go up, and if you're an atheist and you don't believe in God or in the divine, and go up, go in, the parietal lobe, if you just do a guided imagery, the parietal lobe is the part of the brain that's universal, where we lose place and time. Monks, nuns, after studying them in their brains, after long meditations, That's the part of us that can get to a higher state, get out of our primitive brain and all the looping, get to that higher state, take a beat, and elevate yourself to a stillness where you can receive information.
Lori, when we come back, I want to talk with you about the predicted end of the world by some, not necessarily the Mayans, because nobody really knows exactly what they meant with their date. But we'll be back in a moment. Well, first of all, happy birthday to my son, Jonathan, and his little son, Simon. Jonathan is 30 today. Simon is 2. They were born on the same day. Different years, obviously. So happy birthday to both of you, and I hope you enjoy the day back there in St. Louis. Coast Insiders, it's the club, the very special club that many are joining for less than 25 cents a day, and you can too. As a matter of fact, next Tuesday, not tomorrow, next Tuesday will be our video chat for Coast Insiders. It's kind of a fun way of communicating and getting some more inside information about the show that you normally don't hear on the program. So if you want to join, simply go to coasttocoastam.com. Right at the top of the page, you click Coast Insider and fill out the information. We're looking for 2,000 new members every month for the entire year, so you can start us all off. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast We're with Lori Levin. Lori, with your experience as a clinical psychologist, what do you pick up from people nowadays? What are their concerns? What are their hopes and aspirations?
Many people are up against the end of their pattern. They're exhausted in the way that they've been functioning. They've learned what they came to learn from that setup that they express. Now they're willing to make huge shifts. It's almost like a slingshot where you have to pull back the rubber band far to go 100 times further forward. You know, we've gone back and back and back, and the elastic is stretched, and we're all in turmoil, and there's so much doom and gloom. And now we see that if we can get out of our own way, there are huge, beautiful horizons ahead. But we've got to be willing to face the change, because in that transformation time is a deconstruct moment where you're in the nothingness. The way that most people deal with change is that they have to so hate where they're at, that they're willing to risk the fear of the change.
Right.
Because they don't know what will replace it. And that's why the meditation is so important, to give people wind at their back. And usually, you know, in the way, because I'm a spiritual psychologist, I teach you to find out how and who is behind you. Is it your ancestral line? Is it angelic realm for you? Is it God as you understand it? What is at your back? And that moment of meditation will bring it forward.
What's the best way to meditate, Lori?
Early in the morning, before you jump out of bed, if you've got little kids, and that's impossible.
Yeah, that's
and then
true.
Right before you go to sleep. You know, this is the way I teach. This is not an organized TM philosophy. This is using your sleepfulness to help you reach those states of a little bit more stillness, and then ask. And then in that invitation of asking, that which guides you, and the words to say are, for my highest good, only of love and light, what is it that you want, you know, what do you want to tell me that I wouldn't know to ask? So you're almost inquiring to your highest self, your God self. Automatic writing can help. Go to the computer, light a candle, put down the date, the time, and then write. Just get it out. Or take your pen to a legal pad or a pencil. That will help ground you. Or take a walk in the early morning dew. Anywhere where it's still, nature can help. The other way to do it is to really take a bath, a shower, something to get you slowed down. And as you start flexing that muscle and information comes through, you will be able to do it while waiting in a booth for a friend to show up to lunch or tea. You'll be able to do it while you're driving in the car with your eyes open. You'll take each moment where you can go in and go up as a moment of exhale and inquiry. Also, to take note of the way that you process information best. Usually, the other side, the divine, will contact us in the portal of entry that we use to process information most. Some people are visual. Some people are kinesthetic. Some people are auditory. You know, also, it depends on who on the other side is trying to reach you. If you're guided by your deceased father and your father was gregarious, you might have no trouble reaching him. But if your father was shy, you might ask and invite your father to come in. If a parental figure either put you up for adoption or abused you, you put up a barrier and a boundary of you are only allowed to contact me if you are of love and light and you are going to guide the best interests of my life, this quadrant. So leave room for those on the other side, ancestral lines who are deceased, to come and guide you and believe that they might have worked on themselves. But it is important to hold up that boundary. Must be of love and light. Must be in the best interest of the life that you want to live.
There are many out there, Lori, who will say that 2012 could be the end, could be the end of this planet. They cite the possibility of some kind of calamity from the sun, maybe a war. They don't know what could happen, but they think this is it. What do you think about this predicted end of the world?
Well, I, as I started the show out, I do believe that it's the end of the world as we understand it, that we're giving up the collusion of linear time and we're coming into our vastness, which is beautiful and a plus. But let's assume, for the sake of mulling it over, let's assume that humanity is gone as we understand it. My work was started by many doctors who were bedside to a lot of patients who died and called out the persons who weren't in the room, angelic beings, Jesus, God, that which came to put them through to the portal of the light to heaven. I also have studied people who have had out-of-body experiences or people who have been severely abused and left their body to get out of the pain and then re-entered their body to live normally after the abuse was over. In studying all those phenomena and reincarnation, I feel, and you have, every single person has to make that judgment for themselves and their belief system is real for them, has to make the judgment that there is life after life. I call it life in life because we are guided and directed and loved by life forms that are here. But let's assume that our carnal body is dropped. We are still eternal. And our consciousness as a collective will go on to evolve into something that we may not perceive as yet. But I don't think that's where we're going, George. I think we're going to keep our carnal form, and I think we're going to go into our vastness, intuition, telepathy, connection, collaboration, creativity, to soul groups, to all different kinds of beings all over the world will help us. That will be our recognition, our miracle.
Why do they think 2012, though, for some of those that think this is going to be the problem year? Is it because of the Mayan calendar, or is it something else?
I think it's a connection of a lot of different dots. One is we are truly in turmoil. I mean, the economy, the unprecedented weather conditions, the way that we're all up against poverty.
And I think we're on the cusp with a war with Iran. I mean, I feel something happening here.
War, famine, drought, you know, solar storms. I mean, it's all completely converging at a perfection time of a 5 year.
Is it like the perfect storm?
Yes, for change. So, and also the deconstruct moment before the better. So if this is a deconstruct moment before we're all unbridled by all of our old constructs, and that's a global, you see, that's how we know we're all connected. And even Mother Earth is in on this. I mean, we are much the way a body would have a melanoma. I mean, we are toxifying our planet. We are hurting the plant kingdom. We are impinging ourselves on the animal kingdom. I mean, we and the beavers do more for our environment to reconstruct it than any other animal. And what are we doing? So this is a time of really strong self-reflection and strong inventory and reading the signs.
Well, we're going to find out, won't we? This is the year.
Big one.
Sure is. Now, tell me about some of the things you've been working on. Of course, the book, God, the Universe, Where I Fit In. What else are you doing these days?
I wrote a workbook called Life in Life, which is a series of meditations and exercises, 52. So you could do one a week, or you could do speed it up and do more. And I'm getting ready to publish that. And I also wrote a channeled book with a rabbi in Brooklyn, and a particular 1500s rabbi, a very, very famous rabbi, came through me. And his name is Isaac Luria. He's known as the Ari. He's the father of modern Kabbalah. And I'm very privileged that he would come through, and I'm finishing up that book. So I've been busy.
Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, how did the channeling occur?
It was really quite... The rabbi in Brooklyn, his yeshiva student, read an article about me and told him to contact me. We met in my living room, a Chabad rabbi who's also a Kabbalist. And he asked me if I knew who Isaac Luria was. And I said the name sounded familiar, but he was in the room. Did he want to know what Isaac had to say? And he said yes. I said, you had a fight with your wife yesterday, but it led to an epiphany because you were looking at a passage with a book with a tree on it. I mean, not knowing anything about Isaac Luria, he wrote a lot of, well, he didn't write, he was an orator, but his students wrote 200 volumes for, you know, years about his orations, which is about the tree of life. And I said, he's telling me that you and I, who this man I've never met, you and I are going to write a book. I'm to go to your house and sit amongst all of the ancient books, and he will come through me. And we met 6 or 7 times at his home, and it just flew out of me. So the transcripts are complete, and I'm patching it together. And it's going to be very exciting, because what this man, the reason why he came through me as an intuitive and also as an orator, because I tend to speak quicker than I write, is that he wants to revise what he said low many years ago to bring unity, the universality of all religions together.
Does he think whatever he said years ago was wrong?
It wasn't complete, and it was blindsided by him being in human form, that he didn't have the vision that he has now from the other side.
That's pretty fascinating. Does he get into anything in terms of predictions for our future?
He, you know, interesting that you said that, because he does not, I'm at a loss for words, which is very rare. He doesn't really care, is not the right word, but he's unattached to whether or not humanity prevails. And, you know, that's kind of what I was alluding to.
Maybe it's not concerned.
You actually, no, because it's humanity in carnal form. And here's the interesting part of what you asked me before, and we were talking about. You become, as an intuitive, you become much keener and more aware of your receptivity when one has faced their death, when you become unattached to outcome. And I've had a lot of near-death misses, so I've had to face my death and not be attached to whether I live or die, which does not mean that you squander the gift of your corporal form. But once you've had an out-of-body experience or near-death experience or some battling of a disease where you've had to face your death, you do become quite keen on what's really important. If someone yelled fire right now, what would you grab out of the station, George?
You'd grab, actually, I wouldn't leave.
You would you'd grab who you love.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd stay, and that would be my microphone right now. I'd stay on the air. We've had fire alarms, Lori, go off in this building, and they've told people, you know, to leave. One, you know, over the years I've been here was an accident. The other was a drill. I'm not going.
Okay, but let's say the smoke was there and you knew there was truly a fire. What would you leave with? You'd leave with the people you love and the animals you love?
Well, if it was in a house or something, sure. Absolutely.
Well, I think this is an age, this time of us being tested and stripped and up against our constructs, we're going to become less materialistic. We're going to become more spiritual. We're going to become more less defended, more in our heart.
I think we have to do that, don't we?
Or we don't survive because the resources are not in any one country's pocket. And for us to all survive together, we have to share.
All right, let's talk about this date, December 21st, 2012. Whatever the Mayans knew, whatever they did, it might be a very special moment here. What do you think it was?
The little I know about their culture, they were really great astronomers. They were great mathematicians. They had a knowing, you know, beyond all of their instrumentation.
Somebody taught them something.
I believe that we are not alone. As you do. I believe that we are gifted oftentimes with a very loving, advanced knowledge that Earth is a very dense realm. We are a grounder. We are a grounder not only for our planetary system, but for a lot. And I also believe, which is going to be out there for a lot of people, but we are so vast that we are not just on Earth. We have a construct and a collusion to see this as linear and an agreement that this is our predominant memory. But as I stand here, I don't believe that there is all of me on Earth. I believe that all of us have the capacity to be on Earth and other consciousness, or our consciousness also expands into a multi-universal consciousness.
The Chinese, you've looked a little bit at what they've done. Do they look at this differently than we do?
They talk about critical mass moments, like we're at a critical mass moment where we must be up against movement. We're going to have to change. Critical mass moments require, you know, it's like antithesis and thesis or synthesis. I mean, we are going to have to really refine exactly what our values are, who we are, and come from love.
Well, they may be right.
If we can't do it.
They may be right indeed. Of all the things that you've studied with regards to intuition and spiritual guidance, what would your biggest recommendation to people be today, right now?
To really take that beat, you know, when you're having a fight with whoever your loved one is, to not respond in your usual either under-responsive, fight-flight-freeze, or over-the-top, to look at your difficult internal states, to look at the ways that your thinking might be looping when you're holding that grudge and just chewing on your cud about how much you hate that behavior in the other person, and go in. Take the beat, go in, and then go up and say, God, please help me now. I need some guidance. And then breathe. Excuse, if you're in a business meeting, excuse yourself to go to the restroom. If you're in the middle of your argument, say, I've got to think about this, and walk away. Some intervention, self-imposed intervention, where you start doing it a new way, whatever the doing it is.
That's good advice. And I, you know, and the good part too is, you know, with people who do lose their cool, maybe they need to walk away, Lori.
Yep, and then some people underreact, you know, like they're really hurt and they're bottled up inside. And
which is bad, too. It's bad for your health, isn't it?
Yep.
Have you found that people who are more expressive are generally more healthier?
It's so funny. There used to be a button that the more you complain, the longer God lets you live. I always had that on my desk. I'm not sure. I think that, you know, whether you way underreact or whether you way overreact. I think that doing a self-inventory and really getting to the bottom of, from a loving place, how you truly feel, what's really important to you. Is it really important that person cut you off on the highway? Are you really reacting to that person cutting you off? Are you feeling really bad about yourself
yeah.
and nobody's really seeing
or
you?
Or you're just having a bad day.
You're just using that as a you know, that road rage as a cover-up. You know, why are we discharging the way we're discharging?
And road rage, Lori, is unbelievable these days. True. Good perception. We're going to come back, final hour, with Dr. Lori Levin. We'll take your phone calls as we talk about you on Coast to Coast AM.